Many waters cannot quench love. Welcome back to Hackberry House, a podcast devoted to the Word of God and the persecuted church in North Korea. My name is Bob, and this is podcast number 597. It is October 20, 2016. Today we finish the Song of Solomon, and actually all the books of poetry, going on to Isaiah soon. We're in chapter 6, verse 13, and the question is, who is this Shulamite? Is this the same woman as we've seen throughout the book? The question is, the wife, the lover of Solomon, a poor country girl from Shunem? Shunem was a town in the distant tribe of Issachar. Or is she the proud daughter of a king? Now the wife of a king, a prince's daughter, as in chapter 7, verse 1, how beautiful are your feet in sandals, O prince's daughter, the daughter of Pharaoh, in fact. That's the possibility there. And I'm reading in 6:13 where it talks about, oh, come back, O Shulamite, come back, that we may gaze at you. It's the only mention of her, of that name anyway. Well, the commentaries go their separate ways on this one. It seems to me that the best comment was that Shulamite is no other than the feminized form of Solomon. Not a town in Issachar, but just a name for Solomon. She has taken her husband's name, perhaps, and is being called this here as a badge of honor. Solomon. My husband is Solomon, the Shulamite, or I am a Shulamite because my husband is Solomon. Solomon, or a chorus of singers that's brought into the drama, wants Mrs. Solomon to remain, that she may be observed a little longer. Come back, that we may gaze at you. Such a beautiful sight is she. Solomon himself seems to intervene at the end of the verse, where he says, why should you gaze at the Shulamite as at the dance of the two companies? He's questioning their gazing, it looks like. Maybe he wants just to have himself gaze at her and no one else. And the interpreters are here. They're all over this verse. Some have seen Christ and his great love for his own bride, the church, in this dialogue, especially the part about wearing his name. Solomon becomes Shulamite and Christ becomes Christian, you know. We proudly wear the name of him who loved us. So I don't solve the problem there, but I give you an option anyway, because the book doesn't solve itself. There is no clear description of who this Shulamite is. But it could be a nickname for Solomon, and it would seem unusual that after all this time we're just finding out that this was really the woman and where she's from. I'm questioning that, but like I said, it's not clear. Let's go on to Song of Solomon, chapter 7, verse 4. Your neck is like a tower of ivory. Your eyes are like the pools in Heshbon by the gate of Bathrabim. Your nose is like the tower of Lebanon, which faces toward Damascus. So, a nose, oh boy, like a tower. Why such imagery? What is this? It sounds strange to us today, for sure. But Solomon's talking about its location, its beauty, the Tower of Lebanon, its function, perhaps comparing all of that to a popular edifice that he himself had built in the land. Perhaps it was a watchtower where men are posted to discern trouble. Properly placed, well-built, beautiful to behold, a good comparison to that center of your face. Some translations even say face instead of nose. Everything he saw on his beloved made him think of something beautiful. Are you like that with the one that you love? You know, something beautiful he had seen before, loved before, and that's the first thing that comes to his mind when he sees the different parts of her body. There's no fault in this woman. He can't find any fault in her. Again, the interpretation could well be that this is what Jesus will see in his bride. He sees it now, when she's finally made into his image. I don't offer that as a definite, okay? I'm just saying that's one way to look at this, for sure. How about Song of Solomon, chapter 8, verses 5 and 6? Who is this coming up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved? Beneath the apple tree I awakened you. There your mother was in labor with you. There she was in labor and gave you birth. Put me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is as strong as death, jealousy as severe as Sheol. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. What in the world is all of this about? Seems a little deep in here. I'm speaking of the literal meaning being that way. The interpretation is beyond that. But just what is he saying here? There is a literal scene being portrayed, no matter where you want to go with it in terms of interpretation. You've got to see what's being said first. Verse 5 seems to say that the two lovers, or the newlywed couple, enjoyed one another's company under this certain tree, the apple tree here, that was pointed out by Solomon as they're perhaps taking a walk. Oh, see? Now, that's the tree where I kind of woke you up. Remember? Do you remember? And coincidentally, again, I'm trying to read the text literally here. Coincidentally, that's the very spot where you were born. Very special place. Very special tree. We awakened our love under that tree, and you personally were born there through that midwife. Do you remember being told these stories by your mother? Precious memories here. Who continues talking in verse 6? Indeed, the speaker of verse 5, for that matter, is the subject of many discussions, which I'm going to just bypass right now. The harshness of the language, love is as strong as death, jealousy as severe as hell or Sheol, perhaps suggests that the king is speaking, asking to have the wife's total devotion, reminding her of the power of love, their love, and then the power of jealousy. He seems to be saying that the fiery flashes of a jealous love are from the Lord, the very flame of the Lord. That's what it says. Here, jealousy is praised. Now, there is a jealousy that's outside the bounds of a man of God. He seems almost to be sounding a warning here that his own jealousy would be aroused if she didn't take seriously the commitment to which they are entering. Starts out with the memory walk. You see that tree? Remember where we started? Special place where you were even born. I just want to remind you that something good has begun here, but be careful that you hold on to it, that you remember my jealousy. Remember, I cannot have you with anyone else. You have got to be mine. I'm reading a lot into that, but I'm trying to get at what was being spoken here. And then, of course, the interpreters will come along, and maybe rightfully so, and say, that's how it is with you and the Lord. You're going to make a commitment? Remember the times that we've had together, but it's been good. But now, you know, it's time to commit yourself and to tell me you're going to be mine forever, the Lord wants us to say to him. And be warned that I will not countenance any unfaithfulness on your part. Serious talk here. Song of Solomon, chapter 8, still, and then verses 8 to 10. Talks about a little sister that's not formed yet. What are we going to do for this? Why, all of a sudden, where does this come from? Many have declared that from verse 8 on, it's just an epilogue. It's not really a part of the song. They can't piece it together with this love song. Others say that no. Solomon was not in touch with our idea of what a song has to look like. Here he's just continuing on in his description of things as they were. Talks about his wonderful time with the bride, the bride's birth and birthplace. Now let's talk about the sister. This is not some deformed woman about whom they're desperate. No. We're talking about a very, very young, undeveloped girl who one day, when she does develop, when she does become a woman, she's going to have a suitor like Solomon. She's going to need guidance into her marriage. And then they have this discussion. They have this discussion about what sort of person she will evolve into. Listen to this. If she is a wall, what do we do for our sister when the suitor comes? If she's a wall, we're going to build on her a battlement of silver. But if she's a door, we'll barricade her with planks of cedar. What in the world is that talking about? What kind of a person is this little girl going to grow up to? Well, suppose she becomes a wall. What? How does a person become a wall or a door? These are obscure ideas, perhaps, but the one idea that surfaced in the commentaries that I was reading that really made some sense is that a wall person is chaste, a virgin. No one's able to break down her defenses. She's strong. She marries as a pure and holy woman. If she's a wall, we'll build on her a battlement of silver. We'll honor her, beautify her. The door imagery that seems quite appropriate as an example of the opposite of the wall. She's loose, yielding. She'll be protected. If she's that kind of woman, if she doesn't seem to be going the right direction here, she's just a door. I think you understand where we're going with that. Then we're going to barricade her. She's not getting out of the house. We're going to barricade her, block her way. She'll be protected. And then the bride, in verse 10, comments on her own development. I'll let you read it. Both physical and spiritual development, and how Solomon found such satisfaction in her. Perhaps her little sister is listening in on this conversation. So I'm not seeing that it's a divergence from the theme at all. We have this wonderful love, Solomon, you and me. I hope that my little sister will have what we have when it's her time. And if you want to preach from there, go ahead. I'm not going to put the application on it. That's a good application as is. And then my last question in the Song of Solomon in verses 11 and 12. I couldn't get away from this chapter. Why are we talking about a vineyard? Suddenly we switch to other things. Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Hamon. He entrusted the vineyard to caretakers. Each one was to bring 1,000 shekels of silver for its fruit. I had a vineyard too. It's at my disposal now. And 1,000 shekels, Solomon, are for you. And a couple hundred for those who take care of its fruit. You who sit in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice. Let me hear it. Well, no doubt the symbolism could be rich here, but I again comment only on the underlying story, which does indeed take another turn here. Seems to veer off from the beautiful romance of the earlier chapters. But love, which was at first passion, has now resolved itself into familial concerns. The little sister, for example. And the everyday business matters that a good marriage entails. His good wife is now seen managing some of the agricultural domain that the two have accumulated. Solomon's vineyard will be cared for by others now. And her own vineyard is similarly let out to other workers. The couple is beginning its new ventures in the palace and have to leave the rural life behind. That in itself, good lesson. You've got to drop it, everything, folks, when you get married. Now, sometimes some of those things can be kept, but it's up to that other, your partner, to be sure. You don't just drag things into a marriage unless your partner's with you on it. And ask a lot of questions, will you? Oh, ask a lot of questions. It won't offend. Oh, if it does, it's okay. Ask questions. Don't just drag the things in. So they're talking about things that they're going to have to deal with as they enter into marriage together. Good stuff. Overall, then, if you must symbolize in this book, we do have a picture of Christ wooing and winning his church, becoming committed to her, and asking for the same commitment. The intimacies of our friendship to Jesus, followed by the responsibilities of kingdom life. It's all spelled out. But in the end, verses 13 and 14 of chapter 8, the overarching theme of the book concludes, I want you. It's about you and me. Oh, all these other things, surely they come. Little foxes and my sister and my job. And okay, but overall, I want you. Let me hear your voice, King. Come to me. I need you now. I need you always. Is that how it is with you and Jesus? Or have you gotten caught up in the family stuff, the church stuff? Have you gotten caught up in the business stuff? You're doing all these other things that aren't necessarily Jesus related. You don't really have time to hang out with Jesus. That's a serious issue for you and me, because I do get distracted pretty easily. May the Lord bless you and help you to understand this wonderful song, the Song of Songs, it's called, the Song of Solomon. Well, it is Spurgeon time. We only got one day left in the week for our podcast, but we'll do that, Lord willing. We will start a Spurgeon message tomorrow. They're pretty long, you know, so I'll give you half tomorrow, and God willing, on Monday we'll get the other half. By then I should have something from Isaiah cooking. I hope you want to go ahead of us and read some of Isaiah for yourself. What a fantastic book that is. They're all good, folks. They all came, as we believe, from the Lord. Have a good time. Don't forget Song of Solomon 8:7. Many waters cannot quench love.